Welcome back to the Hardline. Enter at your own risk. Got a good reason.
fan.com. I am TJ Moe alongside Bob Ramsey, Matt Rocchio, and John Hadley. It appears Cliff Kingsbury, according to Peter Schrager, who works for the NFL Network, they have a really good show. Good Morning Football is what it's called. He is also a senior national writer for FoxSports.com. I don't think that's true anymore. That's in his profile. I don't think FoxSports.com has senior writers. They went all video unless they have recently gone back. That may be outdated. Peter Schrager, though, reporting Cliff Kingsbury will be the next head coach of the Arizona Cardinals. Now, I would have told you this yesterday. The second he resigned from USC, because USC blocked him from doing any interviews. So in order to do these interviews at all, he had to resign. And in order to resign from a sure position, you are guaranteed a spot by Arizona. Now, Arizona, and they had had talks before. He also, earlier today, I believe, or yesterday, was interviewing for the New York Jets head coaching position. I guarantee you that the Arizona Cardinals said, Cliff, if you leave there, I will guarantee you a spot here and we will pay your buyout. He said, okay, but I still may want to interview with the Jets. Okay, great. Do what you need to do, but bottom line is you will have a landing spot. And so he will be, according to Peter Schrager, the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals next year, which, by the way, makes a lot of sense if you are paying attention. There's a young quarterback by the name of Josh Rosen down there, and they play in the same division as Jared Goff and Sean McVay. So that's going to be a fun to watch. Now, I do not ever recall something like this happening, and that is a guy getting fired from his alma mater. You do not fire a guy who's worth a crap. If you think there's any future, that's your alma mater. You want him here. He's the guy that you can sell forever and say, hey, you're a Texas Tech lifer. They treat you like gold. Look at me. I'm a head coach. I had a half a career in New England. You know, I saw everything, how it happened up there, and they brought me back. All I had to do, I went to Houston, Texas A&M. I'm right back here, baby. I'm here for life. And they fired him because he never could get over the hump, couldn't really assemble a coaching staff, never did get a defense together, and last year the offense fell apart. So they fired him. And he's still a great offensive mind, but in the NFL where they look down at you, the NFL looks down at college football. Make no mistake. Everybody who thinks, you know, everything's happy-go-lucky, you got all these guys. Pete Carroll goes back and forth, win championships. Jimmy Johnson did it. You know, Nick Saban's gone to Miami, goes back. This is not a sport. These are two separate sports. You don't go back and forth. It is a rarity that you're Jim Harbaugh and you can go to the Super Bowl and then go win 9 or 10 or 11 games a year at Michigan. That is a rarity. And the guys in the NFL look down at the guys in college and say, that's all gimmicky stuff. That'd never work up here. We got to be smarter up here. They look down at Chip Kelly and they say, there's a reason you're down in college because your gimmick worked up here for about 2 years when you went 10-6 and we figured it out and you can't hang with us. You go back down there to UCLA. That's the NFL's attitude. And I have never, ever seen an NFL owner or NFL coaches in general embrace a guy who just got fired from not only a college position, but his alma mater, and then now turn into the head coach of an NFL team. I've never seen anything like this. It absolutely goes against everything I've ever witnessed.
So how does it happen?
Attitude.
How does it happen?
Trying to mimic what you're watching happen with Sean McVay and Jared Goff. Everybody's doing it. Matt LaFleur, they're trying to do this with him. Matt LaFleur, I get into this.
So maybe that stigma is changing.
It may be changing. And look, it has always worked for a couple years. It always
just has a short shelf life.
Chip Kelly worked for 2 years. He went 10-6, won the division. It is all.
And usually it's one of two things. It's either a gimmick on the field or your gimmick in the locker room stales out. Either you're
right. The message.
You're a rah-rah guy and that works in college. Like Pete Carroll's first stint in the NFL failed because he couldn't get anyone to listen to his rah-rah attitude anymore. And either that fails or, in Chip Kelly's case, your gimmick that you brought onto the field stales out and kind of fails.
When I was in training camp at the Rams, there was a tight end. His name was Cunningham. And he played for South Carolina.
Justice Cunningham?
Yes. And he played for Steve Spurrier, South Carolina. And we were sitting in the sauna one day, hiding, trying not to get cut. And he said, Spurrier's funny, man.
And Justice was dunking on you because he was the Mr. Irrelevant, and you weren't, and you didn't get drafted. So
right.
That was unfair.
I was ultimately irrelevant. And he said, Spurrier, man, he said, I like college better. They don't listen to me up there in the NFL. That was the gist of it.
Yeah, because here's different. The thing. When you're Spurrier and you bring your Heisman Trophy out on the field in an NFL field, they all look at you like, yeah, but we make millions. When you do that to college players,
and
it
got
works.
You nine guys on your team who won that.
You
do it
to college
award.
Players and you pull out the Heisman Trophy, that probably still works.
Well, it's a whole different thing. Look, college players, even at the highest level, you try to get them to perform like professionals. But in the NFL, they are professionals. Okay. And it's about money along with everything else. It becomes a different world. In North Dallas 40, one of the players, John Matuszak, I think it was, has it out with the coach. Says every time I call it a business, you call it a game. And every time I call it a game, you call it a business. And then there's a great finish to that. But it's a little bit of both, in particular at the professional level, because you are playing. This is your job, and you're playing for money, and there are some expectations to go with that. So there, you go to that next level, you're treated a certain way, but you also have certain expectations as an individual player, whereas with some rare exceptions on the college side in athletics, it's, again, there are many exceptions, but it's more of a team thing.
Yes.
Versus being a pro playing for his livelihood.
Yes, and that'll bring us into our next topic here. But you watch college coaches. They are the ultimate control freaks. They are the ultimate they try to choke you into submission to doing what they say, and they threaten your scholarship with it, or whatever that looks like, right? They'll threaten whatever they can because, in essence, your parents have passed off your autonomy that you didn't have when you were living in your own house to them.
To the coaching staff.
And they're still in charge of you. And then you get to the NFL and nobody's in charge of you, bro. And so when you try to pull off the Nick Saban in Miami, good luck. And you try to pull off Steve Spurrier in Washington, good luck. And Spurrier, he's happy-go-lucky in front of the camera. That is not that same dude in front of the players. He is as controlling as any guy that you'll ever see. And so everything's good, but Jim Harbaugh will wear you out, man. Jim Harbaugh... Jim Harbaugh is perfect for college. Why? Because after 4 years, he wears on you like hell, and you got to get out of there. And that doesn't work in the pros if you're trying to sustain this for 15 years with the
right.
same guy.
Yep.
So he had to get out and go to college. Then you graduate, and you guys can be buddies later because he's not in charge of you anymore. So we're seeing this over and over again in college. And it like gimmicks work, right? There was a time Vince Young worked for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
He was NFL Rookie of the Year. And Chip Kelly's offenses worked for a little while. And then the NFL studied it and... all that stuff's good. Lamar Jackson worked for about 5 games, and we'll see if the NFL figures it out after this. We have seen the Wildcat work for about a year and a half. I mean, who was it? Cadillac Williams, Ronnie Brown. Ronnie Brown was the...
And Ricky Williams in Miami. It?
Yeah.
And who was my guy in Pittsburgh?
Cordell Stewart.
Yeah.
Really fun.
The NFL gimmicks have always worked for a short time, and
then they figure it out.
College is a ton of gimmicks that work forever. And so now I don't think Cliff Kingsbury is a gimmick guy. I think he is a guy that could transcend the college to pro line. But we've seen over the years, college to pro doesn't work. And has what I was just saying before you walked in was the idea that you get fired from your alma mater and get an NFL head coaching job in the same offseason is totally crazy to me. And it goes against everything we've ever seen from an NFL attitude that they are above what college coaches can offer.
I can only assume, and again, this is merely an assumption. I have to believe the Cardinal organization basically hired themselves a quarterback guru as the head coach, and they have in mind a couple key defensive coaches to bring in to force on him to balance the scales.
Yeah, it could be a Wade Phillips type thing.
I have to believe that was the case. Because Phillips coming with
Sean McVay
was a key element, just like, you know, the Rams back in after the 99 season. and John Shaw basically telling Dick Vermeil, you were hiring Dennis Erickson or you were hiring Mike Martz. It's just that simple. You pick between the two, but you're hiring one of the two of them because we are. The question is, will
his
you
office
be...
is going to be right there. Exactly. So if you want input, have
because
it now.
That's what we're going to do, and you're either on board or you're not.
Right.
And it turned out to be a terrific move. And we've seen other cases where organizations basically, you know, there's just this mirror, this assumption that you hire a GM to be a GM and you hire a head coach to be a head coach when times have changed. I mean, Mike, I guarantee you, Mike Mayock was not brought in to run the Oakland organization. Mike Mayock was brought in to carry out the marching orders of John Gruden.
That's exactly right.
Here are the players that I want. You go find me the players that match this, bring them to me, and let's talk about it.
There was reported exactly the other day that Gruden has final say on every personnel decision.
It does not surprise me. So, you know, I mean, that's the way things work in many ways nowadays.
So are you surprised ultimately that even
I'm shocked Kingsbury got a head coaching
job. I'm totally with you
on the NFL. If I had found out that pick any school, you know, if Kingsbury was hired by West Virginia, I would not have been shocked.
Right, me neither.
If Kingsbury had to start out one level down again and Troy had hired him to replace Brown, who went to West Virginia. Is his name Brown? Yeah, I think his name is Brown.
I believe so.
Neil Brown, I think.
Yes,
Neil, he's done a hell of a job at Troy. He really has. And if you can make headroads at Troy, you should be able to make headroads in Morgan. It is Neil Brown.
Yes.
Okay. My point is, I would not know that. On an NFL scale, I am absolutely shocked, unequivocally. But I'm not more shocked about that, and we haven't spent any time because it's the name value that matters. I mean, literally the most shocking NFL head coaching hire that I have seen come down the pike.
Matt LaFleur.
It's Matt LaFleur.
Absolutely.
That's the one that just utterly, it's just so, you know, because some people say, what did Sean McVay accomplish? Well, a hell of a lot more than Matt LaFleur did. So, I mean, you take away Matt LaFleur with Sean McVay, and what has he done?
I will name them again. We had his rankings. So these rankings are bad on their own, and then I'm going to put them next to their 2017 rankings of the guy that he replaced. He finished total.
That's called a tease, Bob.
I'm teased.
Total offense, they finished 25th this year. Now, Marcus, you can make up whatever excuse you want for all this. Marcus Mariota's arm, you had Blaine Gabbert in there, you know. But you didn't figure out you got to just hand the ball to Derrick Henry until, like, week 12. Okay, once you started handing the ball to Derrick Henry, he went for about the same yardage that he did the first 11 games of the season. You finished 25th. Before he got there, with virtually the same personnel and more weapons, actually.
And a healthier offensive line, go ahead.
Yes, they were 23rd. So you added more things, had Mariota out, but you ended up two spots worse. Your points per game, you ended up 27th. 27th in the NFL in an offensive league. Last year, they were 19th. You added Deion Lewis to the group this year. He should be able to get you some points just by making four guys miss and making a play when everything falls apart. In pass offense, yes, this is the part you can blame on Mariota being gone because this is tough. But you finished 29th. Have you seen some of the quarterbacks in this league?
Yep.
You finished 29th. Last year, they finished 23rd. So the Packers with Aaron Rodgers, unless you did it this way, unless you said, what we're going to do is this. Aaron Rodgers is in charge, and Matt LaFleur is going to be taking his marching orders from the guy that we've handed the reins to. Now, I think that would be idiotic, but if that's what you did, fine. Then you just hired a guy to fill the spot. But I sure as hell would have brought in a guy who can bring you a new innovative look and teach Aaron Rodgers something, because Aaron Rodgers has pretended to be in charge for the last 4 years under Mike McCarthy, and this is where it got you.
Well, again, once the staff fills out, it might make more sense.
Yeah, could be.
It's not for sure yet, but would you be shocked? I'm a little bit shocked that Mike Munchak's back in the discussion for a head coaching job. That one surprised me a little bit. Every report that came out of Tennessee was that he had no control on that organization at all when he was there.
I will just put it to you this way. From what I was told first time around with Munchak was that he put on a great presentation. A lot of people don't realize this, but head coaches, when you go for an interview, because I helped Joe Vitt with this, when Joe Vitt got an interview with the Jets, you should see.
He didn't get the job?
No.
Hell of a job you did.
No.
Still feel bad about it?
No. Rams hired me.
I'm sure
me.
He
they
does.
Suck. Bit one of the job. I failed there. I was March's guy. His ass was fired. Other than that, it was a great
Saints
career.
Saints didn't win squat when you were down there.
No, but that's the whole key. Was the Saints hired me from a distance, and all I did was stats for them and send them to the GM and to the head coach, and that worked really, really well. Really, really well. Keep me out of the vicinity.
Oh, boy.
But I tell you what, I to this day, I have an enormous amount of respect for Sean Payton and for Mickey Loomis. Mickey Loomis has done a hell of a job with that program, a hell of a job with the New York. I mean, he took a perennial loser and made the New Orleans Saints one of the NFL's marquee programs. Now, a lot of that happens to go with Drew Brees, which, by the way, Bob, if I hear one more, and every time Nick Saban gets a championship game, this comes up, if I hear one more time, well, if Nick Saban had Drew Brees, what do you mean if Nick Saban had Drew Brees? What makes anybody think that Nick Saban's offense or Nick Saban's offensive coordinator, Nick Saban himself, would have had the connection with Drew Brees and built an entire That's organization right. around Drew Brees like Loomis and Peyton did in New Orleans? I mean, that turned out to be one of the most glorious fix. Peyton and Brees, one of the greatest coaching quarterback combinations in history.
That's right.
And they fed off each other.
So to assume another guy's going to have that exact same connection is probably
especially
not.
Back
what
then.
Might have happened Did you if see... Nick if Nick Saban had Drew Brees? Well, I don't know. Nick Saban probably still tried to run the football as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. Drew Brees would still have a screwed up rotator cuff because he'd run him into the ground and he'd be sitting home right now doing announcing. Yeah. That's
or maybe it would have turned around. Maybe it would have been a great day. I don't know.
That's right.
But the assumption that somehow sitting away, Nick Saban would have won a couple of Super Bowls if he had Drew Brees, to me, I think is taking it a step or two too far.
So I think the pendulum
is that
has...
fair, Bob?
I think it's absolutely right.
Okay,
because you just those kinds of assumptions, with no offense, are done just by analysts who don't look at things past the numbers.
There you go.
Well, it's about people too.
And Dante Culpepper never really had it. That was the other thing. You went and got a guy that just he was disinterested in playing football. I think we've swung too far. We got to go break here in a second. But Vic Fangio should be at the top of everyone's list. And I think we have swung so far. The average score of an NFL game this year was 26-23. This is the big time offensive year, right? This was on Colin Coward's show this morning. I thought that was an incredible stat because. Everybody thinks Chiefs Rams 55-45. Oh my gosh, light the world on fire. 26-23. And this is why we're making offensive rule changes to allow things to get better. Why? Because the average college game, I haven't looked at it, it's got to be a hell of a lot higher than that though.
Oh, sure.
And so you go look 26-23 your average game this year. And this is the ultimate offensive year where quarterbacks are on the move and everybody's making plays and you can't tackle anybody. Okay, 26-23. So defense still matters and you watch these playoffs. Vic Fangio, yes, his team didn't pull through because they got a blocked kick and the kicker can only hit the upright. But Vic Fangio is as good as they come. And there's still a place for the Greg Williams of the world and the Vic Fangios and the Wade Phillips to go in and figure something out. And yes, they can go higher than next Sean McVay. But instead of going to get a Matt LaFleur, whose offense ranks closer to 30 than it does 20, go get Vic Fangio, who, by the way, the Denver Broncos are interviewing right now. And if they're smart, they're going to hire him, and they're going to be a lot better off for it.
By the way, Vic Fangio, three of the most dominant defenses of the last 15 years, and two of the San Francisco defenses in last year's Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Guy knows what he's doing.
And I ultimately get the chuckle out of, well, they got Khalil Mack. Well, yeah, sure they did. But he obviously worked them in properly to his defensive schemes. And by the way, virtually every player on that defense has improved over the last 2 years.
And Khalil Mack was almost non-existent in the playoff game, and that defense was still light you up.
Dude. If in your mind Jason Peters wasn't already a Hall of Fame offensive tackle, just watch him devour
that was incredible.
Khalil Mack.
I don't think Mack made a play till the fourth quarter. That tells you everything you need to know.
Oh, well, I'll tell you this much. What I will say is that Mack never quit, and Mack actually made two really big tackles in the middle of the field near the line of scrimmage that even with the camera angle, you could tell there was some green there.
Yeah, right.
If he doesn't make those plays, and they were like spectacular plays, one in particular where he dove to get him, and another one where he beat an offensive lineman, stepped over another one, and made the tackle. Those, I mean, again, I tend to judge people based on adversity. You know what I'm saying, Bob? In almost any aspect of life. When the chips are
down, how are you judging me right now?
Oh, let me tell you something right now.
Chips aren't stacked against you. You're working here. Everything's great. It's not a fair view.
When do we get some swag, by the way?
What's your size?
Well,
it's extra for the material.
Depending upon the time of the month, you could range anywhere from double X to 4X, but
see what we can work out.
Towards the end of the month, I tend to eat a lot of chocolate.
add a player to this before we go to break. I think today, the three best defensive players in the league, Khalil Mack, Aaron Donald, and Fletcher Cox. Add a player or tell me those are the three.
Well, I have to give some thought to it. I mean, one guy who I would have in my top five that you wouldn't is Derwin James. I think Derwin James is a lights-out, difference-making safety that is an absolute force and one of the keys to San Diego's success. You know, every time the Chargers come up, everybody mentions Phillips Rivers. Okay, fine. He is a fabulous quarterback who's been one of the best of his era. But the difference between San Diego sitting at home and being in the playoffs was the San Diego defense this year. And in particular, one of the guys that changed the entire course of that franchise is Derwin James.
Mm-hmm. I think that's fair. And it's especially true because they were so strong up front. That's the piece they needed.
And the kid they got from Iowa has not only proven to be a hell of a cornerback, but has turned into one of the best return specialists in all of football. What's the name of the kid from Iowa who I like so much? Big kid. Last name King, I think it is.
Rock used to know things.
Yeah, he knows. I mean, it's just like,
we'll let you know on the other side. It's like, hard.
I'm on Cam's show.